Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Culture Crush RX, brought to you by Anahata Marketing. We're exploring the concept of company culture and how business leaders from all types of companies, whether they're startups or big companies, can help foster healthy, happy, well-rounded, I don't know why I keep that in my intro because I cannot say it, workforce where everyone is performing at their best. I have three amazing women in the studio with me today. Even our pre-show conversation has gotten pretty exciting. So I can't wait for everybody to listen in to what we have to share. But I am joined by Pamela Slim, who is a book author, community builder, and consultant, who's best known for her first book, Escape from Cubicle Nation, From Corporate Prisoner to Thriving Entrepreneur. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. Her follow-up book was also called Body of Work, Finding the Thread That Ties Your Story Together. Pam has also partnered with author Susan Cain to build and launch The Quiet Revolution and The Quiet Leadership Institute. And her current venture is the Main Street Learning Lab in Mesa, Arizona, which she founded in 2016 as a grassroots community-based think tank for small business economic acceleration. Welcome, Pam.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I'm very excited. So Pam also invited to join us in the studio today, Jennifer Gastelum, who's the Creative Catalyst Coordinator with the Mesa Arts Center. She helps encourage community involvement in the arts. I'm very excited to learn more about your program and how creativity helps foster good leadership. So thanks for coming in, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And we also have Aisha Cogburn. I'm going to get it right. CEO of Epiphany Institute, which I love the name. That tells us a lot already. She's also host of the podcast On Purpose with Aisha Cogburn, author of Five Rules to Win Being You, and founder of Startup Life Support, a community for business owners that has been affectionately referred to as the AA for entrepreneurs. I like that. Welcome, Aisha.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited about the energy that we have in the studio today. So I'm going to let each of you dive a little bit into your businesses and your backgrounds and your stories of where you got to today. We are going to start with, I want to know what everybody's first job was. So if anybody wants to go first, Aisha.
My first job was back in Michigan, in the Metro Detroit area, and I worked at Metro Beach. And calling it a beach was a bit of an overstatement. Yeah. It was more like some gravelly rocks that they called sand on Lake St. Clair. And I worked in between the Oliver's Pizza Shop and the Coney Island that was way down on the boardwalk. And if I was there for 8 hours, I was happy to get two customers in a day.
Oh my gosh.
And I made a whopping $3.90 an hour, which was not even minimum wage at that time. And they were able to get away with it because it was seasonal employment.
Oh.
So it took me all summer to save up to get my clothes out of layaway. Oh. And so by the time I got them out in August, it wasn't even summer anymore.
So. Build character, I guess. Right?
Definitely.
Awesome. Jennifer, what was your first job?
I worked as a server, a senior living community. And yeah, I just served them breakfast and lunch and dinner and made lots of friends with lots of wisdom.
Yeah, that sounds actually kind of cool.
It was cool. I mean, I was 16 at the time, so.
Right. You must have heard some good stories.
Yeah. It wasn't always like the most vibrant, lively
right
experience, but it was an experience for sure. We had one lady who every single time she insisted that her toast be burnt. And she would send it back if it was not burnt. So that was always something that stuck with me. I'm like, why in the world would anyone want that flavor? But alas,
she enjoyed it.
Yeah. I feel that way about bacon, though. Like, burnt bacon was the best.
Oh, I agree, actually. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Well, for me, mine was at Swenson's Ice Cream Store. I was 12 and I was a dishwasher. I made $1.50 an hour. So I'm sure I wasn't even legally allowed to work.
I was going
to
say you were 12.
Yeah. Probably crimes were committed, but you know, that was like the 70s. So nobody cared. And I will proudly state to this day, and thanks for giving me the opportunity, that by 14, I was the assistant manager.
Dang.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, if you're wondering like where my leadership came from.
I was going to say.
Swenson's Ice Cream in San Anselmo, California.
No, but we're going to dive into that because I don't know, you obviously just had it inherently, right? Who at 14 has that kind of initiative? So this is a great lead into our conversation because yeah, there's not everybody has those characteristics at that age.
Well, so I think it was circumstance and maybe built in with like family culture. So
okay.
my my mom and dad divorced when I was about 5. And so we all, my mom did the best she could as a single mom, working 3 jobs and, you know, trying to keep us all fed and so forth. But all of us, myself, my sister, my brother, all went to work at 12 or 13. And so there was a part of it that was a financial necessity. Now, part of it was fashion driven, as Aisha's was too, of like wanting to get my Ditto's jeans, if anybody remembers Ditto's. That, you know, I lived in a very wealthy county in Marin County, California, but we really didn't have money. So there was that kind of funny, you know, not always positive thing of wanting to keep up the appearance, but part of it was just knowing that we all needed to really chip in and help.
Interesting.
I feel like culturally what was a really positive thing on my dad's side, my dad grew up on a farm, and a lot of that work ethic that you learn on a farm was really formational for him in the way that he raised us. And actually, my mom's grandparents were farmers as well. And so I think there's something about, you know, being on a farm, waking up early, taking care of things,
absolutely,
taking care of neighbors. That, you know,
well,
that
and
really
what you see
that
in those formative years for sure shapes how you are in the world, right?
That's right.
That was your perception of how people behave.
Yeah.
What's your birth order? You had a brother and a sister?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest. Okay.
Can you tell?
No, because I would have thought if you're assistant manager at 14, I was like, oh, she's definitely the oldest.
Babies are always the bossiest. Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think my sister listens to this podcast, but I'm going to respectfully disagree. Well, not in my family, but interesting. All right. So take us on the journey. You can give us kind of the Reader's Digest version, but we did mention Escape from Cubicle Nation and how that has spurred where you are today. I love the story of that open letter that you wrote and how that kind of was the catalyst for a lot of amazing things for you.
Yeah.
So can you touch on that a little bit for me?
Yeah. You know, I think my early roots in college, my major was economic development with a focus on economic change through adult education in Latin America. So I lived in Latin America and was learning about economic development models and education as a tool for social change. I kind of quickly found by being on the ground in projects in Colombia and Mexico and in Brazil that I really didn't want to be an expatriate aid worker. I felt like Colombians themselves had a much better idea than some 19-year-old kid, like pretending she knew what she was doing in their community. But I always have had that passion for change, transformation, economic development. So my path kind of went through a whole number of work modes where I started to land into training and development. And that's where I was my last real job. And in corporate was at Barclays Global Investors in San Francisco.
You had a very successful corporate career.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I loved my cubicle. I had a great time. I love my corporate experience. It was really wonderful. I quit in 1996 to start consulting. And I spent 10 years on the road as a consultant, working always on the human side of business. And I loved it. It was so interesting, like solving problems and working with many people in many different industries. But through those conversations that I would have with people, and sometimes it was the person who had hired me to come in to help retain the employees, they'd pull me aside and be like, how did you do it? How did you leave? How did you leave to start a business?
Interesting.
And then I just started thinking about what is it that's unique to corporate employees that want to leave and start a business? And there are certain things emotionally that are different, you know, making that big change, telling your parents at, you know, Christmas dinner, like why you're quitting your job they spent their life putting you through college for, right? That spurred me to launch the Escape from Cubicle Nation blog. So the intention was to specifically speak to the reality for a lot of people who were in corporate who really had that desire to be leaving to start a business. And I say this every interview, you know, throughout the years, is that we need all kinds of different companies of different sizes.
Yes.
Not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur at all.
Right.
Or, you know, they really want to pursue that journey. But for some people, they really do feel suffocated. It's not the right fit. It doesn't work for them. And those are the people that I really like to work with.
Right.
So I spent, you know, 12 years mainly online, working with a lot of people, writing books, speaking all over the country and the world. And then I got spurred through a lot of the conversation and connections I was having with people to open up our own small business learning lab in Mesa, because especially my husband's Navajo. And so for entrepreneurs of color and people who are not always getting the exposure that is deserved, we really wanted to create a space where we were nurturing leadership, capacity building for business owners in our own community.
Yeah. So tell us about the Learning Lab, because Aisha, you teach some programs out of there as well, right?
I do.
And is the Arts Center involved in that as well?
Yeah. To some extent, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of collaboration that kind of comes as, you know, as we do it. They record one of their podcasts in our studio downstairs. We have a cool basement studio, but there's a lot of collaboration that happens in downtown Mesa.
Yeah. I want to learn more about that because I think that community in general, it's really changed a lot in the last few years and probably no small contribution of yourself and other people like you that are really making an effort to create those opportunities for people in the area. So the Learning Lab, tell us a little bit more about it and what kinds of businesses do you work with there or what kinds of people are coming through and taking advantage of your services?
Yeah, so the model of the Learning Lab is to actually be a learning lab, to really be a place to experiment. And our model and our focus is to really be hosting people who are amazing experts like Aisha, who have great things to teach and share, where she can be providing and teaching, you know, her program, in this case, it's Startup Life Support, mm-hmm. to other entrepreneurs that are, you know, in various stages of entrepreneurship. And for me, I really play that role more of community building and connection because we notice that there's a gap of a place where many founders of color can feel super welcome, supported, you know, in all ways. And so it's really more providing the space for people who are wanting to experiment with launching programs. There can be people who get excited because they want to teach a certain class to see if it works. And we can be that space that allows them really to experiment.
Excellent.
So we kind of have a combination of ongoing classes that are, you know, led by people in the community. We host the Freelancers Union once a month, the first Wednesday. We have Startup Life Support. We're starting to get more and more people who are wanting to be hosting events there. And I think the difference is we don't have, like many incubators do, just a set number of companies where they're there all the time and we're developing the capacity.
Okay.
It's really about building the capacity of the leaders who are building the capacity of people in their community. So it has a little bit more of an exponential impact as opposed to me being the expert, you know, from on high that's harping about my own stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so tell us about Startup. I'm sorry.
Startup Life Support.
There we go.
Startup Life Support.
Losing my thoughts there.
And I tell you, for me, I spent almost a decade in corporate America before I realized that what I wanted to do and what I wanted to build required me to go and build it myself. But right.
You were one of those folks.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't this kid that had the lemonade stand and that always wanted to do my own thing. It was just a matter of, okay, I know what my purpose is. And if I can do it in an environment that somebody's giving me a paycheck, okay. But once it got to the point where I couldn't, I knew I had to get out and go build it myself. Mm-hmm. But I started my business after getting laid off, 2009, height of the recession. I'm in Michigan. Growing up in Michigan, you're just taught you go work for a good company.
Yes.
You get your pension. You stay mm-hmm. there till you retire. Get your gold watch. And live for the next couple of years till you die.
Yep.
And that's what we were taught. And so for me to say to my family, to say to my friends who were still employed at the company I had gotten laid off for, I'm going to start a business. I mean, they looked at me like I had a third eyeball in the middle of my forehead. Then when you go through those periods where you're working hard and it's not working,
you start to hear those voices.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have your family like, well, why don't you just go and get a real job? You working? It's not working. And they're coming from a very well-meaning place, but that's not what you need to hear when you're trying to build a company. And so Startup Life Support is really geared around being that safe place where you're with people who get it.
Yeah.
And the questions, and particularly when most people are starting out, they may not be sitting in an incubator around other entrepreneurs. So they're sitting at their kitchen table. They're sitting in their home office. They're trying to figure out all the answers on their own, wasting time and not being in a community where they can bounce ideas off of other people. Or when they're going through those rough times, not realizing, I'm getting foreclosure notices. My car got repoed. Oh my goodness. They're thinking I'm the worst person in the world. I'm not cut out for this business thing. But then you come to Startup Life Support and somebody's like, oh yeah, that happened to me too.
Yeah.
It's okay. You'll get another car.
Yeah.
You know? You realize it isn't the end of the world, no matter how bad it seems. But because you're around people that perhaps are further along on that journey than you are, you can shorten that learning curve.
Absolutely.
And just getting that dose of motivation, like, okay, you can do this. keep going. And I tell you, a lot of the folks that come to Startup Life Support are older. Our average age of our members is 56.
Oh, okay.
Because we've got a member that's 70. But they tend to be people who have had success in their careers and have reached that point where it's like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And so it can be very uncomfortable because I'm good at this thing that I've done for the past 20, 30 years. I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to this. And so you're dealing with self-esteem. You're dealing with confidence building. So more than just business strategy, we're building people.
Yeah. Do you think it is a little bit more challenging for someone who has, you know, by external perceptions, always had success? And then because, you know, there are people that are entrepreneurial in their 20s and they're used to that struggle and they've, you know, built it on a bunch of businesses and they've been through it before. But then when you do it in your 50s, also because you kind of just formed a lot of habits at that point in your life, right?
Yeah.
So,
and you have a lot more to lose too. I mean, when you're 45 and you've got kids in college and you've got a mortgage, you can't eat ramen noodles and sleep on your, you know, best friend's couch. I mean, so there's a more.
Well, you can.
You can.
Wait a minute.
I did it at like 38. I tell you, it's not fun. And that's all I kept thinking to myself. I am too old for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we can keep people from having to eat ramen noodles and be on the couch. But one strength that we have as we're older is we're more patient.
Yes.
And so we're willing to let it play out, to not have to make everything happen tomorrow. So we use that as our strength as well. But you got to keep moving forward and you got to take some risks.
Yeah. So at what point in somebody's startup vision are they coming to you and getting the services or the help or, you know, whatever that they need? Are they coming when they're just an idea phase? Are they coming when they're 2 years in, or where are they at?
We have people along the spectrum. We have people that are still in the idea phase. We have members that have been in business, brick and mortar businesses for, you know, 5+ years who are doing very well, but who just need that place to come and vent sometimes.
Yeah. Like Doc and his dad. We love Doc.
Doc's Artisans Ice Creams. If you have not been here in Tempe, oh my goodness, it is absolutely amazing.
Oh, well, we are in Tempe. Is it nearby here?
Yes, it's on Warner.
Oh. Yeah.
But I don't care if you live in like Cave
Creek. I have to pass by there to get home.
No,
you can go. Well, and it's so awesome because I think our oldest member, there's Doc and there's his dad who is 94.
Oh,
is
wow.
That right?
92, I think.
92?
Yeah.
And so that made me so delighted when it won Startup Life Support where I came. And I was like, we have a 92-year-old like co-founder who's here with us.
Awesome.
And he is right in there with everybody. 92. It was so inspiring.
Who's the youngest that you have? Do you know?
Our youngest member is late 20s.
Okay.
Yeah. Late 20s. So everybody's got a little bit of experience under their belt.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes that. And not that, you know, if somebody came in fresh out of college, they wouldn't feel at home. But the general culture there is, you know, people that have a little bit of life under their belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're approaching business from a different perspective as maybe somebody who's very green and very optimistic. And, you know, we've got some scars that we got to work through.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that can play a role in the way that we approach entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what other types of programs are you offering there at the...
So we have, as I said, the Freelancers Union that meets once a month. And so
freelancers,
that's a really
and
cool,
what types of business? Anything? Really?
In anything. So this is, we're part of a national coalition. And the Freelancers Union is a organization based out of New York, and they have chapters all over the country. And so we meet once a month, and it's people that do graphic design and video and all kinds of things. And there are generally topics that every Freelancers Union across the country is working on simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of collaboration and connection. It's a really positive group. We have different entrepreneur meetups we're hosting coming in October. Very apropos that we're on radio and podcast now. We're doing something called Modern Craft and Podcasting. So
oh,
I have one
cool.
of my clients and friends from the UK who's an audio engineer, and we're going to do an intensive design for people who are wanting to start podcasts and really do it well and focus on the craft side.
Right.
So I'll kind of be focused on the development overall of somebody's body of work and what's your messaging and then what kind of podcast makes sense, and then going all the way into the audio production and tools and setup for studio. So we do things like that. And the model that I always like to be sharing there is where we do something that is a paid workshop, because, you know, now we're supported by my main coaching business, mm-hmm. happily, but not outside funds, is where we always will then do a community day. So
okay,
like on October,
that's what I was gonna ask
on
you,
October 21st, as part of that Modern Craft Podcasting, we're going to do a community day where we're welcoming people from the community. We're going to have, you know, panels of successful podcasters. We're going to connect people and do things like sit around and listen to some really great podcasts and analyze what we hear and just, you know, have fun together collaborating.
Oh, cool. So that's October 21st?
October 21st. Oh, yeah. And it's totally free for folks in the community.
I'll remember to send you a note. We'll put that in our show notes so that anybody that's listening after the fact can go in and look up and register.
Perfect.
Do they have to register for it?
Yeah. Okay. We prefer.
Okay. And then so the other programs that you're offering, is it membership based or is it case by case on different programs or how does that
work? Yeah, it's not. It really is, again, kind of in the laboratory because my main business is being a business coach. So mm-hmm. I have folks who fly in from around the country to do all day strategy sessions. And, you know, that's part of why we don't have like a regular co-working drop-in.
Gotcha.
You know, we do things like every other Friday morning. We host a work on your business co-working. So we all silently bring our laptops and like do our invoicing or reconcile our, you know, bank accounts or work on marketing campaigns, all the things that people never take time to
yes.
do. Because I found that it's so fun and we all love to do business networking and to share ideas. But then there's the time where you just really have to get stuff done. So we've started to do things like meet for 2 hours from 8 to 10 in the morning every other Friday, where we just work on our business.
Your
and I actually have a Zoom channel where I stream with folks around the country. Join us virtually for getting business done. But so there are a few programs we have, yeah,
great.
On a regular basis that are hosted, like Startup Life Support twice a month. But really, we like to create space so that new entrepreneurs can say, hey, I really want to try this workshop. You know, do I have space to do it? So I'm really always looking to be programming interesting new things that give entrepreneurs the chance to experiment with something and get feedback.
Excellent. So I'm hearing a couple different ways that this works. So if somebody has a course that they want to teach, they can use your space and kind of invite their own guests in there, or am I not understanding that correctly?
Yeah, it's think about it as a curated thing. So like here on this podcast, right, you're going to be specifically working with guests, and it might be where you're at a party and you have a great conversation with somebody and you're like, hey, come on down, you know?
Yeah.
We have our point of view is we're specifically there in the community, especially within communities of color, to make sure that we're really cultivating and creating experiences, you know, for folks from those communities. So part of it is making sure that we're really putting energy and effort there.
Yes.
And for people and actively searching out amazing people that are doing great work that just often, you know, might need visibility or support.
And have something valuable they can share.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's not a perfect science. It's part of what I love about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the funny things, I think I'm going to put it on the front door because we have art everywhere. It's a very beautiful space. And the first question usually through the door when people walk in the door just from the street is like, what is this place?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Is this an art studio? And I kind of like that about it. You know,
right.
It's like, well, what do you want it to be?
Right. Yeah.
What do you want it to be today? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. You know, yeah, let's do an art show. And we do art shows. You know, it's really having this chance to experiment. But a lot of the work downtown, and Jen has been doing this for a long time, along with her husband, Augie, it really is about weaving these connections in the community, that
yes.
having people meet each other, collaborate at events, get to know people who they hadn't had a chance to meet before.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this over time means that we have more cohesion as a community and more strength
right.
as a creative community.
Yeah, absolutely. And helping each other be successful. I love that. So let's talk about your art programs, Jen, the stuff that you are doing to help foster creativity in the community and help leaders be more creative.
Yeah. So, yeah, I let's see, a little bit of background. So I guess since we met Pam, my husband and I both are residents of downtown Mesa. We both grew up in the area. I was working at a nonprofit when him and I got married, and then he took over the nonprofit. And long story short, I was running this program, Creative Catalysts, through the nonprofit as a contracted coordinator for the program before they brought me on, coming up on 2 years that I've been actually at the Arts Center running the program. So Creative Catalyst is 3.5 years old at this point, and it's an initiative of the Arts Center that's all about community-driven programming. So it's very much about building community. So when Pam came into the downtown area, my husband and I were very active. We knew all of the businesses. We knew all of the other active community members. We have a community group that meets once a month. We had now taken hold of this Creative Catalyst group as a way to even build off of the Mesa Arts Center, which is this amazing, you know, organization within the downtown that's kind of this massive, beautiful space that is sometimes not always accessible, you know? And so it was a great way for us to start kind of connecting the dots. And before we got on air, we were talking about how when you're really passionate and love what you do, it's sometimes hard to turn that off on the weekends and to not answer emails and to not get on those business phone calls. And that's kind of our life, I think, because my husband and I are really passionate about it. That's a lot of our conversations. It's a lot of what we do in our free time.
It works well if you're both feeling that way. It's only when one person starts to feel neglected that I think that becomes a problem.
I think it, in a lot of ways, does like contribute to building our relationship, making it even stronger. But sometimes there are those moments where I'm like, okay, we have to not talk about work.
Yeah.
We're going to go to dinner. Yeah. No talking about work.
Yeah. So what specifically does the program do? You talk about going out to the community and helping foster that. But what sorts of things do you do with the community members?
Creative Catalysts, as a program, what we do is we have community meetings. We have a committee of community members and we talk about what's missing in our community that's within that arts and creative realm.
Okay.
And then from those conversations, we empower community members to take the lead on things that they feel passionate about. So for example, we do an art brunch. Someone in the group was like, I really wish there was an opportunity to go to brunch, do some art, listen to some live music, and just like have this social experience. So now we've been doing art brunches for 3 years. And it's also a way for us to support the economy because we pop up in different local businesses each month. And now we're even partnering with a charitable organization so that we can contribute that way as well.
Okay.
So that's just one example. But now,
if somebody wants to find, is there a calendar for those art brunches?
Yeah, it's all on Facebook.
Okay.
We're very social media centric with that because it's all, that's the easiest space.
And it's access. Creative Catalysts on Facebook. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Creative Catalysts AZ, I think is what it is.
Okay.
Apparently that's not a unique title.
Oh, Creative Catalysts.
Yeah. And then now, so through that time, as I said, we would kind of empower and give the resources and support to our community, people who wanted to step into a leadership role. And we did that very organically and it was exciting. But now we're at a place where we're doing it more formally and we're creating this creative leadership program through the Art Center and through Creative Catalysts. It's called The Collective. And we're getting ready to launch that. The first cohort will be in January. Pamela is one of our faculty members. She's going to be teaching what leadership is, just to kind of get us started. We're going to be talking about what creativity is, kind of start breaking down those barriers of identifying as a creative person, which not everyone feels comfortable with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that's a really interesting topic. And I mean, because this show is where we focus a lot on company culture, I would love for you guys to kind of talk about that idea of creativity and how that can help foster positive cultures if people are allowed to bring their creativity to the table. You know?
Yeah, I think that that allowed thing is very important because I think that unintentionally, you may not feel like you're allowed to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so even if it's not said out loud, you are not empowered to be innovative or creative. Like, this is just how it is. Follow the rules, follow the playbook. Here's the process. Make sure you do that. There can be this feeling that you're not supposed to think outside of that, or you're not supposed to think of a more efficient or better way to do things. Because this is just how it's been done for forever.
Yes.
But that there's so much value in fostering that creativity in employees.
Yeah.
Because not only is it going to make your employee feel better and more comfortable within their environment, but it's also going to be like game changer for your business, right? If you have a bunch of employees who are just trying to make your business better and are encouraged to do that, then I mean, what are the possibilities after that?
It's true. And I'm like a huge fan, even though I've been involved in the development of the collective, but I'm so excited by it because it's really different in the way in which teaching happens, where it's done through a lot of creative experiences, but it's not just like for artists or people who might identify professionally as being a creative. And when you look at a lot of the way that leadership development is done, ironically, with very good intentions and spirit to make people more engaged and innovative, the ways in which the teaching is done is absolutely kind of sitting in a classroom and looking at PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And like in the collective, we're going to have a session where people are like writing their own play and like choreographing it and singing it and delivering it, you know, within 90 minutes, like totally wild, crazy, fun, interesting.
And that would push a lot of people outside of their comfort zone, which is where the creativity really happens.
That's exactly where it is.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, to me, that I, being in leadership development for 25 years, you know, that's what I have done, both on the organization side and the entrepreneur side. to me, it really just comes down to behaviors and behaviors that are supported by decisions that are made around environment and around how it is that people are held accountable. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, like Jen is saying, it can be like my parents did, you know, around the dinner table. It just takes a look. You know, when you're in the, when you're the one in the meeting who's like, let's not do the offsite that way this year. Let's do this, you know, where somebody can just like send a glance or a slight shift in body language. And all of a sudden you feel that same shame as if you're, you know, the 7 year old spilling your soup at the dinner table or something. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you start to look at culture and the importance sometimes of really stretching people to go beyond in a variety of different ways, which is what the arts are designed to do, right? Mm-hmm. That full expression where your whole mind, body, spirit is open in order for you to be expressive, then it can help shake some of those really well-worn patterns. And mm-hmm. it is totally understandable why people don't want to take the risk of being folks who are changing behavior. But if we start to look at the marketplace, and to me, you know, grave concern that I have when I look at companies that are still operating as if it were 1981, mm-hmm. when we look at the world we live in today, which is rapid change, market, you know, explosion and contraction and people shifting all over the place, we cannot survive if we don't develop new behaviors. We have to get brave with breaking the way that things are done. So mm-hmm. to me, it's essential to kind of accelerate it, to not just make, okay, let's slightly change the color of the tablecloths and do the same old boring leadership, you know, thing with PowerPoint. Like, yeah. let's blow up the whole room and do interpretive dance or something. That's me. I mean, that's what I like.
Yeah.
I spent almost a decade at Dow Chemical, and, you know, the chemical industry, one of the most highly regulated in the world, mm-hmm. and very process driven. And one of the things, and I'm all working with chemical engineers, PhD chemists, and so in that environment, people will tell you, no, I'm technical. I am very left brain. I'm not creative. But one of the things that I found was that was not true.
Right.
There were creative people all throughout that organization, but they weren't given that environment to be able to let that loose. But what you would find is, on the weekend, they did hobby photography.
Right.
And they were artists and they played in a band. And so they were looking for other ways to get that creativity out when they couldn't do it within that 9-to-5 environment. But, you know, as Pam was saying, looking for ways, how can we, even if you're in a very regulated work process driven organization, there are still ways to infuse creativity and the way that we approach even the task in front of us, the way that we define the problem, the way that we create the solutions, the way that we get input from the people around us. And mm-hmm. so as in this program, I know is going to help people to think differently. And as we're able to infuse that into our organizations, whether, you know, we've got 5 employees or 50,000, that frees people and we get so much more out of
right.
the people in the organization.
Right. Well, I mean, I think we all, whether we think so or not, we have creativity inside of us as part of being human.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. One of my last consulting projects was with Chevron, the gas and oil company in the Bay Area. And I worked on a big health and safety initiative. And part of what I see in innovation and open communication and in being safe to question is when it comes to safety, that's actually a really important principle. There's a lot of things we studied of everything from, you know, the O-ring disaster for the space shuttle, you know, where mm-hmm. there's well-documented stories about people that were raising concerns all the way through the process and people were like, don't disturb it, you know, we're on the way, don't speak up and say anything. Or if somebody had sensed when they were on a job site that something was unsafe, and culturally, if they feel like they don't want to challenge the person who might be head of safety there or the leadership, they don't want to rock the boat, it ends up creating a very unsafe environment. And yeah. just as Aisha is saying, I think we tend to think maybe a little bit more openly, we're like, okay, if you work in an advertising agency or something, mm-hmm. right, you could be a little bit more creative. But it really is the, again, thinking about it from a behavior perspective, yeah. it's making a choice to be more open, mm-hmm. to listen more. It doesn't mean that there aren't guidelines and, you know, parameters right. for how it is that you choose to operate with each other, but it's being willing to be a little bit more open.
Yeah.
and to make it safe, you know, for people to question how things are done and have a have an open conversation. It's funny, I think, having looked at both sides pretty much equally in terms of the amount of time in my career of working in organizations and then working in startup entrepreneurship, in particular with people who have left corporate to start a business. What's funny is I think about both like The Matrix and The Four Agreements, if anybody's ever read that book and seen the movie, you know, where it's really the same people. Some of the same people can be in an organization and feel like, yes, it's completely unsafe here, right, to show any creativity. But then once they like take whatever it is, the red or blue pill, you know, and they're like, then they go out on their own. Then they're like, oh yeah, now it's totally safe for me to behave this way when nothing has changed. They're the same person. They could have actually chosen to do it in an organization. In the Four Agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz calls it the mitote, right? The smoke and mirrors, like these agreements we make about how it is that we need to be structured in an organization. And I understand that it's scary and it's hard for people to kind of be the first person who is taking that on. But I think you can be encouraged knowing people actually enjoy being places where they feel more open, where they feel more heard, where it's safe to be, you know, creative. It actually is much more fun to work in places like that. You feel more meaning and contribution. You're likely to stay longer. There's all kinds of concrete business benefits to doing so.
Absolutely. Well, given that you ladies work in a lot of entrepreneur and startup companies now or work with them, how would you recommend when somebody's building a company, whether it's a brand new one or if they're in growth stage, how are they bringing that into their culture and encouraging their employees to feel safe to be that type of person?
To me, the foundation is always there's alignment, whether it's just you and your cat or with, you know, you growing a larger company, where you're always thinking from the beginning about, you know, who are you? What is it that you believe? What are the guiding values and principles? That's the foundation for any business, including if it's just yourself, for how it is that you operate. And then when you define what is that problem that you're solving through your business and what is your point of view about how you think that should be solved, part of that is what can then start to develop a set of agreements and understanding about how you might operate as a culture. So for founders, you know, it's this funny line between what you need with this whole rise of lifestyle businesses and people, you know, saying you can do whatever you want to do and, you know, pretty much design an entire business around your needs. I mean, that can be true for a smaller, you know, lifestyle business. But when you grow bigger, I think it can be informed by you as the founder or set of founders of what it is, who you are and what you believe. But if you're engaging a lot more people in it, you have to think more about what will be a sustainable culture and what are values that are going to drive your ability to be growing a company that's solving a particular problem, right? Either through a product or through a service in a way that really makes sense for the market, in a way that's going to be aligned with customers, you know, for who you are and what you believe. And it's why you have to start, the culture starts, whether you like it or not, on the first day that you start working. Because if you're unconscious about it, you're just going to be acting the way that you act. But if you're conscious, you say, what is the best way I can be supportive and representative of what I believe in my business, either by myself or through other people?
Yeah, that's a really good point you make. I actually say that a lot of times in my show closing and opening is if you don't consciously create your culture, there's one there. You, whether you created it or not, you, I mean, or whether you thought about creating it, it happened.
That's so true.
Yeah.
There's a formula that I use with my clients, whether it's somebody in a corporate environment that's looking to build their personal brands or someone who's a subject matter expert who wants to get their message out on a bigger platform. And it's called the tail of the tape. Okay. And so if you think about a boxing match, an MMA match, you know, before the fight starts, you see the tail of the tape. You're looking at their height, their weight, the circumference of their wrist, which seems so random, but it's important in boxing.
Yes.
And so looking at what your tail of the tape is, which is an acronym for what are your talents, your abilities, your passions, and your experiences. And when we talk about experiences, not just your corporate experiences, not just your educational experiences, but your life experiences, what has shaped the way that you see the world and the way that you relate to people. And, you know, even taking that back to what Pam was talking about with diverse entrepreneur groups, when you've got people in the room who look different, who think different, who act different, they're going to approach, you know, what creativity is going to be different for them. But none of that matters if we don't understand who the people that we're working with bring to the table and actually pull on that. Mm-hmm. Because I may know that you are great at being able to just pick an idea apart, but I don't like that about you because I don't want you to pick my idea apart because that takes too long and it makes me feel uncomfortable. So you can't even come to the meeting.
Yeah.
But if I bring you to that meeting and let you do your thing, then that saves us money. It saves us time. It saves us lawsuits, all kinds of nasty things, perhaps even. But knowing who's bringing what and getting them at the table and making it safe for them to use their voice.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I like that.
How much do I love the fact you use an MMA and boxing analogy? I have a long background in martial arts, so thank you for that.
Oh.
That was awesome.
Yes, you are.
I had not heard that before.
Bad butt.
That's really cool. I love it. I want to hear more about your MMA background there, Pam.
Oh, it was, yes. I did capoeira, Afro Brazilian capoeira for about 11 years in San Francisco, where I'm from, running the nonprofit and living in Brazil and starting a youth program. And then when I was in my 40s, I actually brought my son to an MMA class just for him to train. And like all of a sudden, I was like,
Oh my God.
So I was a maniac for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years until I got my black belt. And then my teacher moved out of the area. So I haven't done it in a while. But I do love it. Like, I love the metaphors. And my son actually is boxing now. I know, which is kind of exciting. So it's not for everybody, I realize. But, like, I get super excited when you can throw around Bruce Lee or boxing metaphors. Thank you, Aisha. Yeah. And be a female. Like, let's defy stereotypes, can we?
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely. When everybody sees the pictures, they're going to be like, this is not who I thought was talking to me. So that's the beautiful thing about radio. They can visualize whatever they want.
Oh, that's right.
I'm just going to ruin it for them.
Totally ruin it.
You're better. You're better than they think.
Exactly.
Even more glorious.
Oh, exactly.
My sideshow Bob here.
We're gonna ask everybody to submit their drawings before they look at the pictures. See what they come up with. We'll get some creativity in there for sure.
There you go.
That's awesome. All right. So what other programs do you have coming up at the Mesa Learning Lab? Anything good that we want to get people involved in? We'll share the stuff about the community day.
On Monday, we have the vice president of the Navajo Nation, who's actually hosting a meet and greet there. He's running for president of the Navajo Nation. So that's
cool.
An example of something, which is like, how cool is that, that he heard through the grapevine? Because we've hosted a lot of events, cultural events and business events from Navajo business owners. So, you know, there are things like that that can pop up of places where people can meet in community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of have our programming through the end of the year, which is now just our regular meetup events and so forth. But it's part of what keeps it active and popping is who knows? Like, I don't know. There could be a really awesome idea around the corner. And there's a lot of new projects that I'm starting to work on with ASU in entrepreneurship and innovation. And I have a feeling that with some of those projects, there's going to be a lot more exciting experiments that we can do. And I know just with what Jen is doing, that one of the fun things of like collaboration we have a downstairs basement, which is kind of unique in Arizona and in Mesa. And we've made it into a super cool, like twinkly lights and murals on the walls, like a really fun space. And that's what Jen hosts a podcast as well with Tomas Stanton from the Mesa Art Center. And he just like off the cuff just kind of said, oh yeah, we're at like CAT Studios. CAT is the name of the physical space, which is a Navajo word that means system of kinship and connection. But he was like, yeah, we're down in, you know, CAT Studios. And I was like, yes, it's the studios. So one of the things that we're really talking about, you know, they're always interviewing really interesting artists. There's a lot of visiting artists that are coming to the Mesa Art Center. And really a vision that we have in the spirit of literally elevating voices, helping people to tell their stories, that we want to see a lot more activity that's happening in our studios. And they're generously like hosting the equipment there. And what we're doing, you know, any sponsors listening, right? Come talk to me because
absolutely.
We want to actually be, you know, setting it up to where we have on a regular basis the equipment that's available and that we can begin to develop programming around training people, you know, about production and podcasting that is the great equalizer, right?
Yes.
We know that when
this
people start to get
their Business Radio X
right?
Same thing. Yeah.
And that's where we can see we're connected, right?
Yes.
We're connected in that vision. And to me, like the more people that get really comfortable with shining their light. I mean, Aisha does amazing work in her main business of helping mm-hmm. people to get focused on, you know, who they are and what they do and how they contribute and really build up their platforms that way. Yes. But it's, to me, there's a lot more than just utilizing as a marketing tactic, having something like a podcast or a video right. show. When you really think about it deliberately, it is a chance for people to really be crafting interesting stories yes. that make change, that yes. make a positive difference. And whatever that is for you,
right.
whatever it is that you feel really moved to create, that's the opportunity that we have. I mean, I know yeah. personally, that's what moves me so much as a coach is helping that to happen, helping people to create meaningful things that actually make a difference in the world. And that's absolutely. More of what it is that we want to see more people creating.
Yes, absolutely. I am 100% behind that. So Jen, tell us about this podcast that she mentioned. What's the name of it? How can people find it?
It's called Wordplay Cafe Podcast.
Oh, great
it's
name.
All of the platforms.
Wordplay Cafe.
It's a way for us to extend the conversation from our monthly event in downtown Mesa. It's a spoken word and storytelling event that we do at a local coffee shop, The Nile. We always have a feature. We have a house musician and then we invite an open mic. So we have both poetry and we have storytelling and we have music. So
oh, very cool. That happens when?
It happens typically on the second Thursday of the month.
Okay.
We just started
with the evening events.
Mm-hmm. So the okay. next one will be October 11th.
Okay.
But our podcast releases every Tuesday.
Okay.
And Tomas and I, we are very fortunate. We get to interview a lot of amazing local artists and then we have other touring artists that because we're at the Arts Center, we get the opportunity to talk with them about their stories.
Okay.
And it really is us just asking about their origin story, how they got their start,
awesome.
What drives them, their passions. And it's ideally an inspiring thing for the other creatives in our community.
Okay. Yeah. Is it local as in you're trying to focus on Mesa-based artists or anybody in the Valley?
Just in the Valley. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
Tomas
cool.
is Phoenix, so we can't be totally
that's
Mesa.
That's right. We got to be regional. Yeah.
And people can travel to Mesa. It's a destination.
This is
it
true.
Is such a destination. Thank yeah. you for saying that.
Exactly. All right. And Aisha, you have a lot of great programs that you are working on. So I know we talked about Startup Life Support. I'm so sorry. I keep stuttering over that name. Mm-hmm. What else do you have going on? You've got a lot of hats you're wearing.
Yes. So Startup Life Support, I should tell folks, that happens the first and third Thursday of every month. So we're okay. meeting this Thursday, but always first and third Thursday at 6:30 p.m. So it's on Kez's website, so mm-hmm. you can find the links there. But we're always there, so come out and join us. But
okay. And anybody's welcome. They can just drop in, or do we want everybody to register for these
things? We would like you to register, because okay. we do cap it. We keep it an intimate community, so okay, we'd like folks to register.
Okay.
But tying back into just being able to share your story and just changing the landscape of the stories that we're seeing, the messages that we're hearing out there. There are so many folks, even in the corporate environment, who are subject matter experts, and they're looking to really have an impact beyond yes. one particular organization or one particular community. And so one of the things that we do, and right now that is our 80% focus with the Epiphany Institute, is helping people to develop their stories, you know, what is that difference that they're bringing to the marketplace? What's their tape, their unfair competitive advantage? And how do we help them to cut through the clutter of all of the information that's out there? Because it's great. We've democratized information. I mean, you think about if you're trying to advance your career, there's information out there now that you didn't have available to you 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You're starting to want to start a business, but Google how to boil water. You're going to get 58 million results, you know? And the same goes for a lot of the information that we're looking for. And all of it isn't relevant. All of it isn't true. And so for those people that know that they have value to bring to the marketplace, not only does it open up opportunities for them to move beyond just being practitioners within an organization, but we help them to then be able to connect with those folks that they are uniquely gifted to serve. And so that's what we're doing through our initiative called Platform for Purpose.
Platform for Purpose.
Free masterclass coming up.
Oh, okay. When is that?
It is the 27th, and we'll do one every month. But if folks just go to platformforpurposewebinar.com, they'll see the information there.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, this has been a really, really great show. I thank all three of you ladies. I think we could sit here and talk for hours and hours. There's a lot more to touch on, but maybe we'll just have to do a part two or something. Mm-hmm. But I'd like for each of you to share contact information if you'd like that so people can find you. Aisha, you shared the website for that. Well, how do people get a hold of you? Do they find you on LinkedIn? Or
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on whatever social media platform you're on. The biggest thing is just the spelling of my name. Okay. C-O-G-B-O-R-N.
O-R-N. I had it spelled wrong. Yep. That's why I kept pronouncing it wrong. I'm so sorry.
So I'm on social media there and coachaisha.com. That'll take you to the hub of where everything else is.
I-S-H-A. Yep. Aisha. All right. Beautiful. And that's all I remember. Okay. Jen, where do we find you?
So you can check out Creative Catalysts on mesaartcenter.com/creativecatalysts. Mm-hmm. That's where all the goods are. And then Facebook, same thing. Instagram, same thing, but you add an AZ on the end. If you wanted to contact me directly about any of our programming, which we do a ton of stuff, or about our leadership program that we're launching, it's just jennifer.gastelum@mesaartcenter.com. And okay. Gastelum is G-A-S-T-E-L-U-M.
Perfect.
Perfect. Is there an open public event coming up about the collective or?
There's not an open one, but we will probably be getting one set up in October.
Okay, so, perfect.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yes, when are applications available? Yes, note, I'm a marketing assistant in that program. Unpaid, mind you. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
And you can find me at pamelaslim.com. Facebook is the best place to learn about our activities at the Main Street Learning Lab. So it is K-E-N-Mesa. K-E-I-N-M-E-S-A.
Okay. K-E-N Mesa.
That's right. facebook.com/K-N Mesa.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think hopefully we can all figure out that Facebook piece. But
yeah.
Hopefully.
One never knows. You'd be surprised.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now it's, I don't know, Facebook's becoming like the redheaded stepchild. Is that still an expression we're allowed to use? Yeah, I think a lot of people are abandoning it for other platforms, but that's a different conversation too. So anyway, thank you all so much for joining us and thank our listeners for joining us on Culture Crush RX, sponsored by Anahata Marketing. Very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community. And as always, I hope that you've learned a few fabulous tidbits today and at least enjoyed this conversation. So we'll talk to you next time.